All right, guys, how do you like that intro music? That intro music is amazing. My own son, DJ Studio Man, created that just for this podcast. I love it, Calvin. Thank you so much for doing that for us. I think it's really cool. John, probably haven't heard it yet, but at the intro of this podcast, you're going to hear it. So today is a very special day for me. I feel really blessed in this industry to know some really amazing people. And part of the reason for doing this podcast is to get my friends and the people I know that are incredible in the industry, people that make a difference, to get them on this, to just ask guys, hey, man, we're starting a podcast. You want to come on? So I have the legendary Mr. John Lee from Deck South in Marietta, Georgia.
Yes, sir. Marietta, Georgia.
Hey, I got it right.
Yeah, last week you didn't.
Mark King was shaking his head at me, man, because I had it all wrong.
Where's he from, real quick?
Mark King?
Mm-hmm.
Mark King is from Twin Cities, Minnesota.
There you go.
I got it right. So this episode is about John, and I want to know more about you, and we can go back as far as you want, and you don't have to. But it's always interesting to get a little bit of a backstory, and that's where we like to start because it just kind of spurs off some more interesting stuff, John. So, like, you know, where'd you grow up?
So I was, first of all, Jason, I'm excited to be on here, man. I appreciate the invite, and I'm happy to see what you're doing, and it's great to talk to Calvin. I was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's where it all started for me. Grew up on a chicken farm. Worked a lot side by side with my grandfather while my dad had a 9-to-5, and I'd work the chicken farm with my grandfather. Mm-hmm. Somewhere along middle school, my dad got transferred up north to Cleveland, Ohio. We lived up there for a few years, and then Atlanta, Georgia. And that was my first 18 years of life right there.
Okay, so grade school. You were where?
So yeah, grade school. So Chattanooga.
Chattanooga.
Up until sixth grade-ish, uh-huh. Somewhere around there.
Then
junior high was in Bainbridge, Ohio, which is outside of Solon, which is outside of Cleveland, for about 3 years. And then Atlanta. My father moved us to Atlanta, Georgia, Roswell, Georgia, which is
north of Atlanta. Old were you when you moved to Atlanta?
Eighth grade.
So that must have been a tough transfer, man, because like you have your buddies, you're in school, you know, you have all your friends, and then your parents are like, dude, we're going to Atlanta. And
dude, so you hit the nail on the head, man. It was interesting because I mean, I think I still had hay in my hair when they pulled me off the farm in Chattanooga and sent me north. And it was a real formidable time. I started to understand how to pronunciate words differently.
Okay.
Which was a good thing. When I came from Ohio back to Atlanta, in Ohio, kids were pegging their jeans, right? We were rolling our jeans up. I was going to Beastie Boys concert, you know. I came to Roswell, and it was like a new thing, you know. People are like, who's Beastie Boys, and why is this kid rolling his jeans up? And it was, I remember sitting in my, my parents' house, looking through the window one day thinking, man, if I could, I'd probably walk back up there. It was a time, you know, I mean, we all go through different times in our life, right? That was a tough one. It took me a minute to get some friends.
So the chicks weren't digging the peg pants, huh?
I don't think anybody was digging.
No, nobody was digging it.
Hey, we were doing that. You fold them over,
bro. We were doing that up here, man. We had our I forget what they called it, but you know that look. There were some guys up here in the Northwest that were doing stuff like that, and I was contributing to that look.
Can you tell them about Funky Monkey, the radio station? When it first started?
Oh, yeah, dude. We had this radio station that came online around here, 104.9, called the Funky Monkey. They played nothing but Beastie Boys for 3 days straight. I go, this is the coolest radio station I've ever heard in my entire life. I changed all my stations to that station. It didn't matter. And then after the third day, they started playing alternate music. I'm like, what the hell is this? But that was pretty cool. I bet you that was a fun concert, huh?
Yeah, it was the one where they licensed to Ill, right?
And so
behind the stage, they had the big airplane, and then they had a big something else that was inflated.
I wish I could have seen that, man. That's cool. Okay, so you get to high school, you got your Beastie Boys peg pants on. And were you into sports or anything, or did you do any academics, or were you, what was your gig?
I was never a real smart kid. One of the reasons why my dad moved us, or at least pulled me out of school in eighth grade, like I didn't even come in between school season, school years. I came right before baseball season. So he didn't want me to miss baseball season down here. So, I wrestled and played baseball. Those are my two sports. Learned how to wrestle up north, which that wasn't really going on in the South, at least not in middle school. So wrestling and baseball are my two sports. I played those all through high school. Wasn't a great student. I have attention span of a squirrel. I was not the A student, but I always got by, but sports is my jam for sure.
Did you pursue any additional education after high school?
Yeah, I actually went to college, man.
I did.
And I got a piece of paper after 5 years, and I think it's actually in that closet over there. Somewhere behind some stuff.
And where'd you go to college at?
So I graduated from Tennessee Chattanooga. I went to a few different colleges, but ended up getting my piece of paper from there.
Yeah. What was it specializing in?
Psychology.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the only thing that would keep me going to class, man. I remember having a psych class my freshman year, Dr. Metzger, and he had a big, long gray ponytail, and he said some stuff that was mind-blowing to me. And it was a reason to come to class and pay attention. The power of the mind and being able to with one decision change the course of someone's life, like that, just something about that resonated with me. I thought that I was going to I worked in a boys home in college, state owned boys home. I'd put 40 hours in over a weekend because we would have to be counselors and stay overnight. And so I was able to, put some hours on the board and make a little bit of money. But that's really where what I thought I was going to do. It was a passion, being able to hopefully affect in a positive way, somebody that was had a tough time in their life, right? They were, again, state-owned, so their parents had given them up, whatever.
So you were a helper from a young age. You wanted to help others better themselves from a young age.
That's a great way of saying it. I think so.
I don't know a lot of kids at 18 years old that want to work in an environment where they're giving people a hand up. You can might just say, hey, man, have a good day today to somebody, and it might change their whole outlook on that day or maybe on their whole life. You don't know, but for you to go out at a young age like that and just be straight up like, I think I want to do this. You're into psychology. You got this job. That's wow, man. That's mind bending to me. That's pretty awesome.
It's interesting. It's an interesting take because I hadn't really thought of it that way. But yeah, when I look back on it, I was always that kid that I'd rather talk to a stranger, a bum on a corner that's panhandling, while my friends were like, I don't know, doing whatever. I think everybody's got a story, and that's real interesting to me. And so the way that started at the boys' home, I filled in for my roommate. He was working there. He was a psych major. He's 2 years older than me, and he's like, man, he had played on the soccer team. He's like, I can't work. Can you fill in for me? I talked to my boss. He's good with it. Listen, all you got to do is make sure that nothing gets burned down. Just, the kids are, the boys are asleep. You're in the, like, just if anything happens, call 911. I'm like, okay, yeah, I got it. And after a weekend there, I realized, wow, this is something special, right? Because these boys were looking for guidance. They were looking for something. They had a tough lot in life. They were dealt a tough hand. And so, yeah, it really, And I think at that point, I probably kind of leaned in and really started to enjoy the psych classes more. I had no idea what I wanted to do long term, but yeah, that was my path that I thought what was going to happen.
So you kind of developed this set of skills while you're in school, and you're able to help these kids a little bit move along the way. Cool.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Yeah.
All right, man. I dig it.
Did your psychology degree help you? I know we're jumping ahead a little, but did it help you in your business further on, like with employees and making decisions and dealing with customers, that kind of thing?
Yeah, man. Calvin, that's a great question. I will tell you real quick to preface that when I got out of school, my first and only job offer was at a place called Fort Hood Mental Institution, because I had a bachelor's degree in psych, which doesn't equal a lot. They offered me $11,780 as a salary. And I was like, wow. Oh, well, it looks like I'm not going to be able to make it. You know, so for many years, Calvin, I said my degree has served me zero, that I haven't done anything with it. But when I look back on my life and I think part of it has understanding human dynamics a little bit, understanding, human behavior a little bit. I mean, anybody that's in the world of psychology knows that a bachelor's degree doesn't equal a whole lot in that world. But Calvin, I think there's some of it that's maybe helped me in my journey.
That's awesome. Okay, so you graduate, you got your certificate, you're thinking that this maybe isn't the path you thought it was. What's next for John Lee?
Man, the story that I tell the story that I went to work for a builder, the reality is that took me about 6 months. I went to sling copiers door to door. It was the only job I could find that would pay me. And I needed to make some money. And I sold copiers for, I think, 5.5 months and actually did pretty good at it, but absolutely freaking hated it. So I started working with a builder up in Chattanooga, doing his punch out stuff, just doing anything I could for him. And about that time, realized how much Atlanta was booming with the Olympics. And relocated back what I considered home, and hooked up with Lanier Contractor Supply, building their decks, installed sales, things like that for them. And my girlfriend was a cart girl at a golf course and came home one day and said, "Hey, I met this guy. He asked me if I had a boyfriend, whatever. I told him I did, asked what you did. I told him, here's his card." I look at it, it says US Dex out of Rochester, New York. And about 6 months later, I went to work for him. And that was kind of what kicked it off for me.
So how old were you at that time?
24, maybe.
So you're mid-20s.
24. Yeah.
And you go to work for this guy at US Dex?
US Dex. Great name. Okay. Yeah. He had come from DeWalt corporate. They wanted his thing was, I want to go head to head with Arkadec. And I was like, Arca who?
Yeah.
No idea who they were, right? Who? I don't know. He said, I want to do it different. I want to do it W-2s instead of 1099s. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, cool. And he very passionate guy. I was ready to walk through a wall, let's go. Helped him open up his Charlotte office, his Orlando office, obviously his Atlanta office, which is Alpharetta. And learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes on his, I think it was 39 and change, about $40,000 salary, gave me a $500 truck allowance, a Dell laptop, and I thought I'd hit the lottery. I was ready to go. And so that taught me a lot. Less than 2 years, a little over a year and a half into it, I realized it was a sinking ship. He owed me a lot of money on credit card reimbursement. And, that was the birth of Deck South from there. And they went out of business that following year.
So you're 26 or so.
Yeah. 26.
And you start Deck South.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what year are we?
97-ish.
Okay.
At that point, I didn't incorporate Deck South until 98. It didn't really get up and run until 98, but yeah.
Okay.
Right. So maybe I was 27.
Okay. But. So composite lumber was available?
No.
Not yet. Not in that region yet.
So there was T-Rex, right? There was the original tracks, right? Like there was, you know, there was actually TimberTech, the hollow board.
Yeah.
The big, that actually Lanier Contractor Supply had, but nobody down here was really talking about it much. I mean, you got to remember, this is the belt buckle of Southern Yellow Pine region, right? I mean, everything at Southern Yellow Pine comes from North Florida, South Georgia. So it's Great Southern's done a phenomenal job saturating the whole market down here. So, there wasn't a whole lot of composite, at all.
So you're primarily building out of SYP, which is Southern Yellow Pine.
And
you are probably not using a whole lot of solid sawn beams either. You're probably laminating a lot of your beams together.
Yeah, I mean, everything was two-ply that we would smash together. I mean, we had, back then, a composite. I mean, I don't even remember the first handful of years ever getting a hold of anything dry. No KDAT, nothing, right?
Right.
It was just all wet lumber.
And KDAT's kiln dried. It's a special process that they do where they heat it or warm up the material and kiln dry it. They dry it in a kiln so it doesn't warp and twist and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So I mean, they take it 60% moisture down to about 6% moisture. So get all that stuff out of there. But there was paraffin wax injected decking, which was about the most custom that we could get at the time. But laid on the 45, put a 1x4 over the fascia to hide the end cut. Hit it with the Roman OG bit, man, that was custom, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a starburst, sunburst, whatever you want to call it, pattern. And that was about as custom as it got. Throw a bench here or there. But that was it back then. And that served us well. I mean, sometimes I miss those days.
Right.
rinse and repeat. Just bam,
simplicity,
bam, bam.
Yeah.
Simplicity.
Knock out some squares. I get it. Yeah. I totally, yeah. Sometimes you miss those days. But when did things start growing? You took on a business partner for a while, right?
Yeah. So prior to that, when things started to actually look like a business, I don't know if I should say it looked like a business, but it felt like a business, was when I brought in my first employee, Marcelino Rincon, who's actually still with me.
Wow.
That's when I realized that I could step. We would switch car. We had one truck that would pull our trailer, and sometimes I would jump in his van and go make sales calls so I could leave my truck on the job site so he could pull around the trailer, especially when we got a dump trailer. And I was driving an F-250, but, head under the hose at night, go do sales calls, work during the day. I guess it was 2005-ish. When you mentioned a business partner, Mike Reasons came on board and actually opened up our second location. I have to go back and look. I think it was 2005-ish, right around there, 2004, 2005. And so Atlanta is a tough market to navigate with traffic, right? Like any big metro. I mean, you can go from one end to the other, take you several hours to get there. So we divided up the city and kind of, he ran one side and I ran another. And things were growing at that point. We actually were importing lumber, Ipe lumber in containers, bringing them through the Savannah port. Correct Deck we were able to use it down here. Ironwoods, Ipe, whatever. And so we set up a lumber yard that
We did.
It was interesting, man. I called a supplier. So we got a big contract with a builder, and it was a bunch of townhomes. And I started adding it up, and I'm like, holy crap, that's a lot of material. How are we going to? This was in 2004. I called a treatment facility that's no longer around, and I said, hey, I'd like to buy tractor trailers of pressure treatment. He goes, all right, so what's your name? I tell him. He goes, what company? I said, Deck South. He goes, oh, we don't sell to contractors. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Okay. So about 3 weeks later, I called him, and I don't know if it's the same guy, but I said, this is John of South Lumber. We're a lumber division. And the next thing you know, they'd sell to us. So we were burning through a tractor trailer load of material, pressure treated back then. I don't know, I think it was one a week, one every 8 or 9 days, wow. Something like that. We were
burning through a lot. So is your team expanding at this time? Is your crews getting more crews, bigger team? Yep. Or?
Yep. At that point, we had three crews. One of them was I had a 6-man crew that did nothing but new construction decks for a builder here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And it was revenue. Yeah. You know, I mean, it wasn't anything that you're looking at going, man, I'm real proud that we're building that, because builders weren't paying and they still don't pay. But back then it was what got us. It's what paid the lights some weeks. You know what I mean?
Sure.
10 years later, you know, we got completely out of that side of things. But I'm very thankful for the new construction industry in our world, because it got us up on our feet. A few years after Mike was running Suwannee, a few years before the recession, I mean, we were blowing and going. I think at one point in time we had 12 crews. You know, the lumber yard was clipping away. We had 2 delivery trucks. There were a few other deck builders that would buy from us. Some wouldn't, because they knew, you know, who we were, and they felt like we were competitors. But yeah, that was going pretty good for a while. Okay. The recession hit.
Yeah. So the recession hits. Your lumber yard, did you shut down? Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I mean, overnight there was nothing. You know, we had contracts on the board for the builds, but overnight zero sales on the lumberyard side.
So is that like 08, 09, or?
That was 08, late 08, early 09, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I remember I had a few weeks where I was twiddling my thumbs. But I've never grown my company super big, so I've never had to feed it a lot of projects to could keep the work coming in, you know? I can imagine when you have, you know, several crews, you always got to have a sales team or you or whoever to sell those projects to keep everybody busy.
Yeah. It's a catch 22, right? I mean, it's, you know, goes both ways. Getting into that recession, the 12 crews went to 3 real fast. You know, I had to tell nine crews, hey, can't keep you busy, but we kept 3 busy through the recession.
That's good.
I mean, we were doing everything from, you know, it was like, hey, can I build your deck, walk your dog, wash your truck, whatever you need, sir. We're here for you. Right.
Sure. wow.
You know, I remember a guy saying to me, I'm standing in his office, in his home office. He reached over, Jason, he grabbed a postcard that we had sent out, these postcards a few years earlier. He goes, John, this thing's been sitting on my desk for almost 2 years. And I'm pretty sure now is the time to hire you. And I was like, yes, sir, it is the time to hire you. Yes, absolutely. You. You know, he goes, I think I'll probably get the best deal. And I said, yep, you will. So, you know, we did what we could to make it through that.
Yeah, do what you had to do.
Yeah.
Then you started, explain to me, I've seen some stuff that you've built that, and I've seen it up close and personal, because we came and visited you. I don't remember what year it was, but Calvin came along too.
And it's not 2015.
Okay.
2014, 2015.
Okay.
Seems about right.
So not too far after all this, you know, quite a few years, but you started building, I would say you're getting into your next level, where you're doing enclosed decks and screen porches and roof add-ons, and you're going beyond just the basic square flat deck. You're starting to expand on your footprint a little bit on what you're providing for your client, right?
Yep.
Explain to me how that came about.
Yep. So, you know, early on with Trayton Homes, with the builders, Jonathan Bunn was one of the guys that, he was the guy that brought us over there. We were working at Syntex and he brought us over there. They did a lot of porches. So in early 2000s, you know, he called me into his office. He goes, "Hey man, can you build our porches?" I was like, "Sure. We'll figure it out." Right. And so we made some mistakes there at the beginning, but porches are really big here. Right. So I knew that it was something that we had to tackle. We built upon that. And you know, there, the evolution of it, really, I think it was a mixture between wanting to do something special, and then trying to, back then there was no, we weren't doing any designs that were crazy. It was, it was a lot of hand drawings and a lot of pictures and a lot of, you know, what about this and what about that? When you came down, we were designing in Vectorworks.
I've tried it and use it.
So it kind of showed people what we could do, but it still wasn't the full Monty. But but like that project that you came on,
a couple of them.
Yeah, the one that we shot that that whole episode on. You had your bike. I don't know. You remember, like, your bike? You had your bike there, you didn't have your bike there. That was just the beginning of it. Anyway,
yeah, we rented one for a couple of days and a couple of things on it or something like that.
Well, like that one had a kitchen, right? It had a roof. We had a barrel roof. We had a hot tub. You know, we built some cool stuff. Somewhere, I think it was 2013, was our first six-figure project that just blew us away. Like, someone wanted to actually spend that much money. It was just outrageous, right?
And that feels good.
That was when I think we all looked at each other and went, "Okay, there's some stuff here we can do. Like, we're not having to squeeze a project into a tight budget. There's clients out there that are willing to, you know, to kind of go all in." And so I think that's where it started for us.
How did that magnify for you? You start going down an avenue and you find something, a niche that you're really good at. Your team does executes very well. And now you're taking this new angle. Hey, we offer screened in porches with our decks. But we don't have to screen in the whole deck, but we're going to do this really badass cover over here, and we're going to screen it all in, and then we're going to add this other entertaining area, and we're going to put a little shade arbor over this outdoor kitchen, and where, you know, you start blurring lines of where to start and where to stop, right? But then you do one, and then you show that to four different clients, and then another client says, "I want that."
Yep.
But can you do this? And then I think that's where you started, like in the 20, when were we down there, 2015?
Yeah, I think it was late 2014, middle 2014, something like that.
Or was it after we shot the television show or before?
I think it was
2016, John, because we shot a show and I was really sick. And I remember coming to you and I was almost puking in the homeowner's bathroom because I had this, I don't know what, it was like a viral thing. I don't know what it was. It was stress or something from shooting this TV show, made me really sick. And I remember one of your clients giving me these antacids saying, "Hey, I know you're struggling, man. Let's get through this." And he was an excellent cook, this guy. And he had his buddy there. It was into barbecue. He was like a barbecue expert.
That guy
stuck around. He kept messaging me for a while after we were done. And we're done and gone and haven't talked to you for months. And this guy's like, "Hey, how you been? How you doing? Is your stomach issue better?" And that, you know, the people that everybody I ran into in your city were all nice and kind and caring people. And that's one thing I really loved about Georgia. The Southern hospitality ain't no joke, man. You guys are legit. It's generally just wonderful people.
Yeah.
Not all
of us, but yeah, a lot of us.
So now you're into, you're getting in your groove. I think you're starting to find your niche.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching one of your builds, And all of a sudden, you're adding swimming pools to your landscape. Yeah. I'm like, what is John, is he doing, is he full on a landscape architect now? Like, you guys started really going, I mean, now we're at the upper echelon. We've gone next level. You've gone next level with your company. Now you're at the upper echelon of your industry because you really can't pack much more into a backyard. You went from doing decks and covers, well, from decks to decks and covers, which is actually a full kit, in my opinion, outdoor kitchens. And now you're doing the complete backyard experience. Tell me about that.
Yep. So how that developed, Jay, was like they're working with guys in the city that were providing those services. Like for many, many years, last time I looked, I think we've worked for every pool contractor in and around Atlanta over the years. They would bring us in to build the cabana while they build the pool, build the deck, whatever, whatever. Landscape architects doing the same thing. What you learn in those situations are how other people work and how you either don't want to work or how you would choose to do things different maybe. So there was a time there that I realized this is a heavy lift in getting everyone together, different personalities, because as you know, with a client, it's a collaboration when you do special things, when you build special things. And it's hard enough to collaborate with just the family and those emotions that rise up in the build because it's so personal. But then when you take in a landscape architect and a pool sub and then we bring us all in the backyard, it's like, so I realized, hey, if we're going to do this, we got to figure out how to do it on our own. And so it moved from, I think I got a screw loose with that one, right? Because there's some things that I should be scared of that I'm not at times, and so I look back so that's how it developed, and I realized early on in one of our first projects that it went very well, and they said, you know, their feedback was at a point where I'm like, okay, we're building upon this. Like, this is something that taking over the backyard, owning the backyard, and then turning it back over to them and making sure that everything's done from, no one's pointing at each other going, oh, I thought you were doing drainage. Oh, weren't you running the gas? Oh, the sprinklers? Yeah, I blew through those when I dug the pool. Weren't you doing the sprinklers? Okay, and all of a sudden, the client wasn't getting serviced. So I knew there was a need for that. You called it a niche earlier. It's well said. There is that need, and our market has that client that wants that full blown backyard, and so that's when I really got serious about wanting to provide that for our clients.
So are we? I mean, I don't really talk a lot of pricing, and you can talk about it or you can't talk about it. But are we in a 7-figure budget at this time? By the time you get pools and cabanas, heaters and fans and decks and screened in porches and all the engineering and some of the stuff we haven't even touched on. But
we've had those. Okay. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, had those, and it blows
I can
me
imagine,
away.
I mean, bro. I could even imagine because some of the engineering plates and custom metalwork that you guys have had to do on your specific site specific builds, which maybe aren't required in other seismic areas or whatever, would be in the tens of thousands of dollars just for the bracketry to attach things together. And then 100%. You got to figure all that out. And you got to pay the engineer and you got to go through the plans check and the department and the blah, 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 blah. You know, it just becomes a lot. Do you have like project manager that handles some of that stuff, or is that kind of part of your role?
Yeah. I mean, I still find myself in the middle of it at times, but yeah. So George Rincon is our lead project manager. Shane Moser was our project manager for so many years. He's on the commercial side of things now, does our warranty stuff now. He's also building one of his own custom homes. So we've had some really talented guys that I'm blessed to have in and around me. But you know, you mentioned engineers. Like if we went back to early 2000s and you said, hey man, there'll be a day that there'll be an engineer that won't be a W-2, but he's on your payroll every Friday. You'll talk to him almost every day, and he's a big part. I'll be like, what? Huh? What? Like, but that is what's required in our builds these days. And I don't just mean our builds as Deck South, but the stringent municipalities in and around Atlanta and what they require, it's no joke. It's crazy what we go through for permitting.
Let's touch on that a little bit. I want to delve in a little bit more on that, John, because I personally have had, you know, 9 month permit waits and things like that. We have a lot of salt water where I live, a lot of fresh water, and you know, usually the people that hire people like us, not always, but where I live, a lot of them have a killer view or a nice lakefront property. But with lakefront properties and with waterfront properties come additional rules and regs that you have to deal with. And you know, and I've mostly learned about Atlanta because through you, and not only maybe not having the discussion, but just watching some of the things that your requirements are. And just by seeing the video of the requirement that you had to do on that structural steel plate, it just got, I know, but maybe the common, the average person listening to this podcast may not understand. So tell me a little bit, you don't have to go super deep or however comfortable you are, but about the permitting process and how it's, how, I'm going to say it, how it deters you in your construction, you know?
Yeah, man. Well said. Some days it's 60-80% of our headaches that we go through. And that's unfortunate because as designer builders, that's what we should be able to spread our wings and do and be good at and focus on and give all of our bandwidth and attention to. But we find ourselves dealing with municipalities and red tape on the, let's call it compliant legal side of things, that just inundates all your energy. I mean, I could sit here and bore you with so many stories. I mean, we've got one that we're starting next week, literally that took 9 months to get the build. Part of that build, we've got a big wall, pool, two decks, patio, all that fun stuff. The pool requires a wall. The wall faces the rear of the property. She does not want a spend the money on a stone wall. Don't blame her because it's facing the deer and the squirrels. So we're doing a mod block wall, a modular block wall that's still good looking, but it's not a poured wall faced with stone and all that expense. So we get the permit approved and they came back and said, hey, it's approved, but your client's going to have to use stone. And oh, by the way, you need two walls because there can't be any part of the wall that is more than 4 feet anywhere. And so you know, when you go to the client and you tell her this,
and they
it's
start
like, don't
crying.
Shoot the messenger. And I mean, she's an attorney and she's ready to dig her heels in and all that kind of fun stuff. And it's like, so yeah, man, it's interesting. There's 18 different municipalities. Now there's 19 different municipalities we build in. There's only
so that's 19
two
different-
of those.
19 different business licenses that you have to have.
Yes, and 19 different tweaks of the IRC, 19 different amendments of the Georgia Amendments Code.
And that, is that just in your range of your range of build, or is that just like in your immediate area?
Yeah. So if you drew a circle around our office, that's. And more towards the east side, but it's about a 50-mile radius around our office.
That you service.
That we service. So when it all started years ago, that fell in three different counties, and there were three different permit offices to go to those three counties. Now, inside those counties, there's all little cities, right? The city this, right? So each township, each city has its own jurisdiction and its own different head of engineering, head of permitting that requires something a little bit different. So it can be challenging to navigate. So I have one individual that does nothing. His full-time job, full-time on salary, is to deal with our permits. And he has, there's no less than 50, 60 hours a week he puts in. I mean, I could not personally do that job. I don't have the patience. I've always been of that mind, right? Like, I mean, as a business owner with a screw loose, I've always been in that mindset. Like I eat what I kill. Like we go after what we that's the entrepreneur way. Like when I see something that's inefficient, I don't even know how to deal with it. Right. I'm probably gonna get in trouble saying this, but the level of inefficiency at those offices is just unreal.
Have you noticed that as the older generation is retiring out of the building department, that it's more difficult to convince the younger generation that you want to build the exact same thing you just built 4 years ago in the same neighborhood will not be approved?
I have that problem
religiously as well. I'm trying to give people a vision of the scale of where you started and where you're at currently in your career. And I think you've done a really good job explaining that to us. And I just want to, you know, I've witnessed it. And I still need to find out what's next for John Lee. You know, but before we get to John Lee and what's next, there's somebody else I want to bring in, and I want to get this guy. I haven't confirmed yet, but you acquired a gentleman, in my opinion, one of the best graphic designers of decks on the planet, Mr. Robert Hodacek.
Absolutely.
Explain to me, because I still couldn't answer. If somebody asked me, what does Hodacek have to do with Deck South? I couldn't 1,000%. I could probably get close, but I don't know if I could like nail it. So, John. Yeah. How did Robert get involved in your corporation?
Yep. So Rob and I met at one of the deck expos many years ago and started a friendship. And there were enough conversations over the phone where when I was playing with SketchUp, I'd call him and say, "Hey, man, I'm stuck. I need help." He's like, "Oh, yeah. You know, what's going on?" And it literally was a tongue-in-cheek comment where I was like, "Hey man, like he had a bad day. There was traffic. There was, you know, coming back from." I just made the comment, "Hey man, why don't you move down here and work with me?" And he's like, "I don't know about moving down there, but I definitely would like to talk to you about." I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Are you serious?" I'm like, "I don't know. Are you serious?" "I don't know. Are you serious?" And it was like one of these like, you know, scenarios, and that's what started the conversation. I felt like, I think it was a perfect storm. I think where Rob was, he honestly, man, wasn't being utilized to the incredible amount of talent that he has.
I know Rob too, and I knew that where he was working, I think there were some things he just wasn't 100 with.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, absolutely. And he's always been a big Jason Dr. Dex fan.
Of course he has.
I
love him to death, man. He's a Da Vinci. The Deck Da Vinci is one of his aliases. I can't give the guy enough props. I want him on this show. We're going to get him. I actually tried to call him today because when I was thinking about you and setting up this time slot, I was also thinking about him, knowing that we were going to talk about him today, but I want to get his whole background as well. So I didn't mean to cut you, but I'm sorry I cut you off there. I'm terrible about that. But
yeah, so, you are.
Yeah. I'm the host.
Yeah, man, shut up.
What I do.
Shut up. Let me talk.
That's what I do.
No, you're good, man. So Rob and I started talking. That led into, let's figure this out. Honestly, what had paved that way for me and actually understanding that this thing could work was, I have to rewind the clock. You had mentioned Mike Reasons earlier. When Mike ran one location, I ran another. We dissolved his location and we came in and worked both in Marietta. And Mike lived about an hour and a half away. So there was a lot of back and forth through home office stuff. He was doing some design work. We were talking 15 times a day. I'm out in the field. He's at his home office. We're doing, and even though we're living in the same city, there was weeks that we wouldn't see each other. And so that kind of paved the way for me to understand that, hey, this could happen really anywhere, right? So when I said to Rob, many, many years later, "Hey, why don't we try to put something together? Why don't we do something? I want to be able to provide our clients, instead of just going to a designer," and I knew this, there's a lot of good designers out there. Rob's at the very top.
Right? Oh yeah, he can compete.
So exceptional.
He can compete with it the best.
Yeah, he can swing with the best of them.
He's at the top of his field.
He really is, and he's worked hard to get there. And so we created come on full time. Let's go salary. Let's lay it all out.
Okay.
What can we do? Let's figure out and hit, you know, I said, hey, my goal is we both kind of put our vision together and said, where can we go from here? So about 3 years into working together, we created 33 North. And that's the 33 North Design Collaboration. That's our design company that stands alone from Deck South. 33 mm-hmm. North is the latitude coordinates of our office. And so we picked that as a name, and he completely sits at the top of that and runs that. And so right now we white label designs for about 35 different deck builders around the country.
Oh my goodness.
And so it's fun. Like we get a good sense of, it really is fun for him because, he was designing stuff from Paul of France, you know, from yep. Hawaii to wherever, right? Like, and so I think one of the things for him that's really fun is he gets to design with different craftsmanship style and different looks from, you know, from San Diego to Charleston, right? And, you know, up and down the seafloor. So everything is not just the same repetitive over and over again. And I think that probably, I know that's something that's pretty exciting for him. And by the way, you got to have him on here. You guys would kill it on a podcast.
Well, just tell him to call me. I tried to get a hold of him through WhatsApp. I tried to call him today. It just didn't work out. You know, I'll get a hold of the guy eventually. I will. I'm persistent. I can be persistent.
Let me hit it. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Hit him up.
So that's a surprise to me because I wasn't sure if Rob was freelancing for you or was a part-time or full-time employee. So you guys have a full-time company together. He's still in Ontario?
He is. Mm-hmm. So before COVID, he would come down here once or twice a month. He would stay for days. He'd stay in my basement. We'd go to the office together. And then COVID hit and everything changed, as you know. So he's a full-time employee of Deck South, but we're also partners in 33 North, which is our design.
That's incredible. Congratulations on that. Because that's just expanding the brand, expanding your empire, man. And design work is always highly sought after, especially, I mean, you could get a whole lot of architects and all kinds of other people. They do their drawings, but man, to render like Rob can on a 3D color, oh man, it's crazy. Like you want to just take a drone and FPV right through something, he can create the same effect that I create when I'm trying to fly a drone through a deck without crashing through a $100,000 deck.
well, dude, I mean, you know this, but like the value there is... when we design, like Rob gets it, right? There's not something that's being designed that can't be built.
Right.
I think that's what's been so successful about us working for different deck builders around the country. Now he and I will collaborate on designs for Deck South, but like he doesn't, it's interesting because we have this language between he and I. I can literally give him my notes. And he could be sitting right there and I'm sitting right next to him and we don't have to say a word. And he knows like we've worked together enough to where there's that back and forth. It's quite beautiful, to be honest with you. But anyway, he's amazing. And I'm honored and very thankful that we're on the same team.
And blessed. I mean, you guys are blessed to know each other. But John, to be honest, you know, I don't recall exactly the first time I ever met you, but again, it was probably at one of these trade shows many years ago, and then we started doing a little competing against each other in some of these deck competitions. One year you would kill it first place, the next year maybe I'd get it, you know. McAleer, you know, he was killing it. There's this group of people that I resonate with because I have high regard, regardless of who I'm, you know, I don't know if it's not really a competition, but whoever I'm working with or talking to or anything like that in the nation, there's just a certain amount of builders that I just have high regard for because they do really quality work, you know? Yeah. And that's really where I want to be with a lot of the people that are going to be on this podcast. I want to get your backstory. I want to hear the things that, you know, what got you to where you are. So now you got Rob on your team. Wow. And then, now we're at like, that was like after COVID. So now we're within the last 5 years or so, or last 4 years, let's say, of what you've been doing. And Are you scaling up? Are you scaling down? Are you keeping even keel? Are you just doing larger projects now? Are you discriminating on what you're taking, what you're not taking, or what? Yeah. What's your kind of process now?
Yeah, man. That, you know, for me now, it's all about working with the right clients and taking on the projects that we feel like we can absolutely knock out of the park, and not chasing something that just doesn't need to be in our portfolio. And I don't mean that in any derogatory term. I take pride in the fact that we're able to, at this place that we find ourselves now, be somewhat discriminating, right? I tell clients all the time, hey, I know you're interviewing us, but we're interviewing you just
That's
as
right.
much. And we need to, because we are as much of a contractor as a consultant. You've called us because we are professional grade. We are the ones that, you know, in your world, you swing a big bat and you're professional grade in what you do. There are so many things that I'm really, really bad at, but this I'm good at, and we can do something pretty special in your backyard. So we try to find those clients that are capable, able, willing to go into a project that may be something that others don't want to build. Doesn't necessarily mean they can't build them. It's just not there.
I'm running into that often when we do in those larger scale, unique projects. There's not a lot of dudes that are even interested in taking them on, let alone figuring out how much to charge for it.
Well, that's then, it right there.
Yeah. And then there's a guy like that's like, I know how much to charge for it because I just built one last month. This is what I've been telling people lately. Like, the build I'm on right now, it's a once in a lifetime build. But I've been building these once every year or once every other year. And that's what I see you as. You're building once in a lifetime builds every year. Like, you back in your earlier career, you would never think, hey, man, I just built a $400,000 project, and it's not just a deck. It's a project, right? And it encompasses a lot of the backyard. And I might only do this once in my career. But now you're doing them once a year.
Well, it's funny you say 400. I still remember the first 400, and it was 407, $407,000 contract. I walked back in the door. High five, Tammy. High five, Mike. I'm like, and I thought to myself, there won't be anything bigger, you know. And
right.
There's been some, you know, four times that size, you know. So anyway, it just continued. So I say it this way: when you come out of Atlanta and you jump on 75 North, there's eight lanes. In the right lane is a slow lane. I call that the $5,000-$10,000 deck. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with it. And it's crowded as all get out. Mm-hmm. You move over, that's the $25,000 deck. It's a little less crowded, but still super crowded. You move over, $50,000 deck. So you get in the fast lane, it's $250,000 projects and up projects that are just require different bandwidth, different ability, different capacity to take on projects and do certain things and manage it and charge the right number so you don't go out of business. Because an oops over there is a $50,000 oops.
Yeah.
Oops over there is a $50 oops, right?
Right.
And so there's nothing wrong with any of those lanes. You just find the lane that you want to drive in. We just happen to be over here on that left side and feel like we do really well with it. And it wasn't like we made some mistakes in the beginning. You know, we call it slippage. You and I have talked about it. You get these big projects and it, all of a sudden things start slipping a little bit and it slips here, this slips, that slips, this slips. You add it up and carry the one, you're like, holy crap, there was enough slippage that used to add up to, you know, to projects in the old days. So I think a lot of guys and girls stay away from those because it's just hard to manage it and they don't know how to manage it. They don't know how to charge for it and they don't know how to build it. And there's some phenomenal carpenters that probably could get into that. You just have to have that willingness to do it, right? And so for us, once we got going with it and advertised it and marketed it, put it out there to the masses around the city, there was enough of a buzz of call it keeping up with the Joneses, whatever, where it's like, oh my gosh, I want that. Call them. That's what I want right there. And then it just grew from that.
Nice. So what's on the docket for John Lee right now?
Yeah,
your kids are really important to you right now. I can't do the podcast because I got baseball. I got to check on baseball before I can commit to this podcast. I'm good. I mean, dude, I'm sitting right next to my son right now, and he's a little bit older than your kids are. So it's still nice. And you saw him earlier when we came to Atlanta. So you know, give me some news on that.
Yeah, bro. It's always great seeing you and Kiki and Calvin. I, you know, seasons of life, right? Like you and I became fathers at different times in our life, right? I'm a little later in life with mine. And so I've got younger kids and I want to make sure that, you know, I don't miss anything as much as I can. So what's mm-hmm. next for me? What, you know, I try at this point, I think the best thing that I can do is be the best leader I can be in trying to create opportunities for those around me to be successful at what they're doing and fulfill the dreams that they have. And hopefully that dream that they have can be fulfilled and realized inside the dream of Deck South. And if not, I get it. But if so, we create opportunity where we can do that. And I feel like I take it very personal that that's my job. So, you know, some would say, hey, what, and some have said, why are you so still involved in the business? Step back. And I'm not really sure I know how to do that yet. Right. Like I don't know that they'll ever be able to retire. Like, I don't know, man. I just, it's all so personal to me that I want to be a part of it all. And so I find myself kind of in a little bit of all of it, whether it's operations, whether it's sales, whether it's the marketing side, whether it's, you know, just trying to build the team the best we can. And when I say build, I don't mean get bigger, better, badder, all that kind of stuff. I do mean get better at just staying kind of where we are. You know, it's not, I don't want to be in 17 locations. I'm not trying to be, you know, I just want to be the best version of us that we can be and service our client here. And if that means we do, you know, 30 projects, if that means we do 70 projects, I'm good with either one. But the goal is not to hammer out, 400 12 by 12 decks and call it done. Hey, that's great for those that do it. I know it makes money, but that right there does not get me up in the morning. I don't, that's just not something I want to do. That's not, I want to be able to step back and go, yeah, man, that came together. And, you know, clients look at it and go, I don't even know how we got here, but holy crap. I love, you know, this is unbelievable.
I get you, man. I totally feel you. I get you. I do get it. I think if anybody does, it's me. So, yep, and I appreciate that. So before we go any further, John Lee, I'm going to open up the platform to you. If there's anything that you feel like you haven't been able to say, or that you're interested in talking about, or whatever, you want to toss out some sponsors or anything like that.
Yeah. Plug your socials while you're here.
Yeah. Give us, you know, anything you want to give us, man. You don't have to by any means, but if you want to, we're open platform.
That's awesome. I appreciate it. For anybody that's watching and wants to check us out, we're Deck South on Instagram. We've got a TikTok channel. We're barely scratching YouTube, and we've got a Facebook channel all at Deck South. So, check us out. Jason, I think, I know we're going to talk about a few things that I really do want to talk about here in a minute, but, you know, one of the things I would say is that, and I appreciate this platform that you got here. I am hoping that any of our exposure on social media, if it can make the phones ring, if it can let our client know that we're there and we can do something, and it gets us closer to them understanding who we are, then I'm all about it. And that's really where we are right now. I want to stay contractor first, creator second, as we go through our life of sharing our work with the public. And so that's important to me, staying authentic to that. And so yeah, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate being here.
Well, you're a man of words, and you walk your path. You walk the walk, and you talk the talk. There's nothing more impressive to me than proof is in the pudding. And when you put your money where your mouth is, that is an incredible way to be, and that is the definition of John Lee. So, John, we are going to do a little bonus episode for our Patreon channel. And I'm going to throw a little teaser out to people. If you want to support this podcast and help feed my son, then go subscribe onto Patreon. The links are below. Or you can go to Patreon, right, Cal?
Yep.
Okay. And we're going to talk about a rapper. A rapper named Lil Jon that has gotten very famous for saying very little. and if you want to hear John Lee... Not Little John, but John Lee. If you want to hear his, he's up close and personal, and he's going to talk about it and tell us all about it coming up in our bonus episode. So, hey, man, if you guys liked what John Lee had to say, Deck South, give him a follow on social. Like this video. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Definitely check out our podcast. You can get it on Apple and on Spotify, or you can listen to it right here on YouTube. And John Lee, one of the best builders I know, and one of the best in the United States. Thank you for being on our podcast. I'm so grateful. And check us out next time, guys. Thanks a lot. Over and out.
Thank you.